That's South Africa's Soweto String Quartet with Millennia, the title track of their 1998 album. Sandile Kemeze and Tami Kemeze on violins, Makosi Nguni on viola, and founder Ruben Kemeze on cello. Ruben, the founder and cellist, died last month at the age of 62. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are taking care of business, we hope, with some serious, meaningful conversation about where we are, given the political landscape and what we expect the political outcome to be in just a matter of days, as it were, on Election Day, with fast approaching. We know that one thing is certain, and that is that the outcome will not be pleasant for millions of Americans. They'll have a hard time bearing the outcome. But life will go on. It must. The question is, what kind of life do we want it to be? And it requires us to really get down to some serious work, some serious thinking, some serious planning, some serious organizing. So we are building on the theme that we began some weeks ago, that this election year should be a year of reckoning with the social, political, and economic systems that control our lives individually and collectively, and reckoning also with our personal vision of what we are or choose to be as political people. So your thoughts at 888-874-4888. We see the writing on the wall. We know that it has been, and I agree with Donald Trump, incidentally, it's a fix. The whole process is just riddled with corruption from top to bottom, inside and out. It is time to come to terms with the fact that it cannot be fixed. Pardon that pun. It cannot be mended. It does not intend to be mended. It has been designed to function a particular way, and we keep holding on to the hope that these people, the people in charge of these parties and the process and everything, that they're all really down with the idea that this, you know, this should be a democratic process, free and fair. There's no free and fair. But we keep clinging to the hope that maybe this time things would change. And we have said this and we have repeated this cycle for decades. And we have seen that we've yielded exactly the same result. They win out in the end, from time to time, switching their turns at the helm. But people who have a vision of a different way, people who continue to struggle for a fairer, more democratic process and system, keep getting trounced all the time. So isn't it time that we really get down to the business of finding out what is it that we're not doing right? And on an individual level, what is it that we think we are? You know, we talk to each other, and they're great insights, a very good evidence of thoughtful inquiry and assessment of the situation. So how does that square with the fact that we're not gaining traction here? We're not gaining critical mass. We're not moving in the right direction. This is what we should be talking about and refrain from the self defeating cycles of repeating the same mistakes over and over and over again. And we kind of give a lot of passes and saying, well, you know, people are trying, but, you know, it takes time. We don't have time. We don't have that kind of time. We have to act like this is an urgency because it is. We see where things are going. How do we intercede in our own behalf and succeed at it? That's the question on the table today. 888-874-4888. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Oh, how are you, Trace?
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
What are your thoughts?
It's very hard to actually answer that question that you put out there, because people are stuck in their paradigms, and it's, I've known from experience, it's really hard to change people's paradigms. There's not enough people who've woken up yet to the fact that we're in a masquerade ball and the costume is democracy. So it's hard to change people's minds.
Okay, well, we'll start with that as a premise. And we're not going to argue the point, because I think most everybody would agree with that analysis.
Just your audience, unfortunately.
Given that as a reality, what do you think is a way that people can begin to reassess their relationship with the system and even their own ideas about what they can do politically to improve things?
Well, first, you've got to listen to the station you're on. We've got a lot of good programs that answer that question. But people are stuck in their paradigm. I've gotten people, well, I haven't. I've tried to get people to listen, and they don't. They're just conditioned with the corporate media, and they're plugged into their internet and the YouTube and all that other distractions. You know what I'm saying about that?
Okay, but I'm saying that we are accepting that as a given for the argument that you're making, and we accept that. I'm asking, what is, in your view, a workable idea?
Got to get the word out. People have to be listening to you and Gary and other people on the PRN. Because the corporate media is, you know, full of lies. They hide the truth, and I said to you last year on the air, our real consciousness has been stolen. Or else we would know what's going on.
All right. Well, you got us started today. Thank you, David, for
putting your
ideas on the table today. Thank you so much. Let's go to Chicago. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Trace, how's it going?
Okay, how's it going by you?
It's going okay, I guess.
Well, you know. But look, we've begun this discussion, and perhaps you're in a really good place because a lot of it is evidenced in Chicago, the problems we're talking about. Mm-hmm. What do you think, if we are going to come, first of all, are we going to come to a point of reckoning about the system and about our relationship to it? Do you think that's even going to happen in this election?
In this election, no. I got a feeling that we still got a lot of work to do to have people come to a conclusion of what type of system that we're in. Like, for instance, I'm talking to people after the so-called debate, you know, and everybody, especially in my community, are still Hillary supporters. And there are some who are really kind of like, you know, iffy about voting for Hillary. But the one thing that they always say is, well, I'm not going to vote for Trump because he's a racist. Then I say, well, you know, Hillary is also one as well. Oh, no, she's not a racist. So then then I come to the conclusion, like, then I come to them, it's like, well, how do you know Trump is a racist? I've never heard him, you know, say anything derogatory about black folks. I never heard him use the N-word. But how do you know he's a racist? Well, he's just a racist. And you're saying Hillary isn't? So I pointed them to the speech that that she did, and I think you played it on your show a couple of weeks ago, the speech she did in South Carolina church.
Yes.
And as you know, and I know as well, when you listen to the words that that woman is saying, that is dripping with racism. And it's like they don't understand. First of all, they don't understand what racism, white supremacy is, which is like, you know, and I believe Neely Fuller Jr. said this. He said, if you don't understand racism and white supremacy, everything you think you know about it, you'll be more confused. And that's the way I see with, you know, people in my community, especially black folks, who don't understand that it's not just Donald Trump who's the racist. It's Hillary who's the racist as well. So you giving me this excuse of, well, I'm not going to vote for the racist. Well, you're supporting one in Hillary Clinton. So I think the problem is, I think the issue is that we don't even understand the system that we're fighting against, you know, and that system of racism and white supremacy is one of those systems that we have to battle against, but we don't understand it because we're supporting people who support that particular system. And I think we need to educate our people on what it really is and how this system is putting the wool over our eyes. So it's going to be a lot of work.
All right. It's going to be a lot of work. Let's say that, again, I'm going with you 100% on that. I don't disagree with anything that you've said. However, where do we start?
Well, I would say this on a grassroots level, and I think many people have said this on your show. On the grassroots level, we do start locally. All right. So, you know, that's the one part of it that we have to start. As far as nationally, it's so hard to. I mean, it's so hard to understand because if you can't take care of business, you know, where you live at, then nationally you're gonna, you know, you're not gonna take care of business as well. But you know, honestly, to me, that's where I start. Locally, in regards to trying to get something started. Obviously, we have to understand the politics of the Democrats and the Republicans, not to support them, but to understand their strategies on how they get these confused people to support them, even though that both of these parties are working against their best interests. So we have to understand. And you know, it's so interesting too. It's just like, you know, people in our community, black people in our community, are so entrenched on what Donald Trump says, but they never listen to what Hillary's saying. They never closely listen to what Hillary's saying, and she's basically saying the same thing. So that's something that we have to take into account as well, to listen closely to what these people who represent us politically are telling us and what they're talking about. And you know, have always done this, you know, with media literacy and what we have to listen to what people say and what they don't say.
Well, let's say I'm trying to get something concrete out of you and everybody today. I see your point about going really local. What do you think that you have now, that there is now, that exists now? What could you work with? Where can you start?
I guess as a whole, we can... God, Eutrice, you put me on the spot.
No, but I mean, you're doing very, very well because I see where you're going. I'm just trying to kind of push it a little bit, push the envelope a little bit to find out, in your view, because you know your community, what exists now that you can build on with the vision that you just articulated here?
Well, I will say this, and this just came to mind. Joining organizations within your community that works for the community. And it doesn't have to be an all-encompassing organization. Certain organizations work on certain issues within the community. I would basically start there. Just as simple as, there are certain organizations in our communities that just clean up, the neighborhood, as far as physically cleaning up the neighborhood. If you don't know where to start, then start there. Certain organizations fight against certain things that, that hamper their community. There are certain organizations within the Chicagoland area who, try to fight against the violence within the community. Certain organizations fight against, police brutality and terrorism. Certain organizations fight against, political rapings of their communities. Join one of these organizations. And then at that point, where you need to, because what I'm doing is I am part of certain organizations within Chicago and within the Chicagoland area to see, where my work can matter and where my place is at in trying to fight against the system.
Okay. Well, you have done a lot to get us even more tightly focused. Thank you so much for contributing today, Henry.
Thank you.
Kentucky, Sophia, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. What an honor to speak with you. I just, this is something I've been asking myself since Obama turned his back on the Deepwater Horizon situation. And I realized that the problem is our media. It started with the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine, and continued under Clinton with the gutting of the Communications Act of 1933 and the consolidation of media. So I thought, okay, what can I do about this? So a couple of years ago, I started studying. I started trying to find out how exactly we could reverse this. And there is still there's a rule on the FCC books that says that they are required a broadcast media, and you probably know this because you're in media, obviously.
But
broadcast media are required to keep their license to give federal candidates for office equal and reasonable access. And obviously that did not happen this time around. So I thought, well, what if I could rally a bunch of people? The FCC holds monthly meetings. They're open to the public. What if I could rally the activists? Because in my opinion, unless we get the media back in the hands of the people, we don't stand a chance because we can't educate the electorate. So what if I could convince activists who are working, say, to get money out of politics, activists that are working to stop, pipelines, doesn't matter what your issue is, civil, environmental justice issue is, we all get together and go to Washington every month on the days they hold these public meetings and demand that they hold broadcasters accountable, especially during this election cycle. I wrote letters. I think I got one letter back from somebody from FAIR. I can't remember which organization it was, but I couldn't get anywhere. Everyone is so entrenched in their own issue, and we're so decentralized. And at this point, after beating my head against this wall for a couple of years now, I honestly think that we have to let the system fall apart and play itself out and then learn from it. Because I honestly, as part of getting off the grid and just, stopping participating in anything that feeds into this, the same people that sit on the boards of directors of the major media companies also sit on the boards of directors of big oil, big pharma, big bank, and I don't know what the solution is. And apart from working, mobbing the FCC once a month, but I couldn't get enough people. I couldn't get anybody interested. So That's my solution. Take back the media, if at all possible, so we can begin to educate people. Because, quite frankly, 95% of the population doesn't have time to dig. I mean, the only television I watch anymore is on YouTube because I watch independent news channels, you know. I've tuned it all out because it's all propaganda and it's brainwashing our society. And that's the big problem we have. People say, why are Americans more agitated? Well, because they don't know. But it's not their fault. It's not because we're stupid. It's because our media has been completely and totally hijacked. And unless you have time to dig to find people like you, God bless you, you trees. Thank God you're still here. I hope you live many, many, many more healthy years.
Me too. Thank you.
And, you know, I've listened to you now on and off for a couple of years. I found PRN a couple of years back, and I'm just grateful. So thank you. That's my piece.
All right. I want to follow through with something that you raised here, and that is, wait for the system. The system inevitably will implode. It will cave in on itself. And one of the tactics might be just let it do that. Okay. Let's say we go along with that idea. What do you do in the meantime to gird yourself, to safeguard yourself from this implosion?
Well, I asked myself that question. There's a show on your network. I don't know if you know Carolyn Baker.
Yes.
She has a show on PRN. And I occasionally, she has published a couple of my articles in her newsletter, one on her website. I honestly think that the best way to gird myself personally is to seek peace with whatever happens and let the chips fall. Because if I were 25, I'm 55 years old. If I were younger, I might say, okay, let's get totally off the grid. Let's grow our own food. Let's do this. Let's do that. But in my opinion, they're probably going to take all the land anyway. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. My greatest fear now is that as soon as Hillary is coronated, she's going to pass laws that make it impossible for journalists to do that, you know, for legitimate journalism to exist at all. Communication laws or, you know, I don't know. I honestly don't know. But right now, climate change, I think, is probably going to render most of these points moot in another 20 to 30 years. So I'm coming from a sort of different perspective. But that said, you know, it's like Chris Hedges always says, you don't fight fascists because you'll win. You fight it because it's fascism. I'm not advocating for giving up. I'm just advocating for myself anyway to arrive at a place of peace with wherever the chips fall. And what I do every time I leave the house, I try to do a good deed for somebody. I look for people at the grocery store who need help. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's where I'm at now with trying to fight this ill will. And again, I'm a Caucasian who's only recently learned about white privilege. For the past 5 years, I think I've really learned a heck of a lot. And I'm trying to reach out across all lines, races. You know, I'm trying to have an activist mindset in my own community, and when I try to start conversations with people, but you have to be careful, obviously. But that's my solution today, where I'm at in my community.
Okay, that's quite insightful, and thank you for contributing today. Great to hear from you.
Oh, thank you, Yatrice.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Queens. Jay, you're on the air.
Hello, you trees. It's been quite a few weeks, maybe two, since I've called or so. But I got to tell you, I like a lot of the point of view that has been raised by some of the callers already. I want to sort of piggyback off the last two. One, I happen to be the last lady with respect to the system is going to implode. The problem I have concern about, and I think many of us should, is that what will it look like after? And will we have a Hunger Game or what have you, but in the, metaphorically speaking, but in effect, what will we be doing in the meantime to shape that outcome? That yes, it's going to look inevitably like all empires, the British Empire, the Roman Empire, subject to collapsing from largely from within and largely because of its military overexpenditure as well. But I think that we have to engage, as you are asking, what are you going to do? And I really, truly am hell-bent, and I'm angry, but I'm hell-bent on, yes, I'm going to vote green because I'm not going to waste my vote on Donald and not certainly not Hillary, as diabolical as she is. And it's not a matter of wanting to look to feel good, whether it's the new woman president or the former black president. The race matter is important and something we need to continue to deconstruct those arguments that obfuscate the real issue, which is that we're in a capitalist society and those who control the means of wealth, they determine the narrative. They get us fighting with each other and we get confused about what we ought to be uniting about. So within our individual sphere, no matter whether you're talking to your cousin, your neighbor, your wife, your friends, we need to have a communication and a dialogue as best we can. And in this contemporary society of market 101, of branding, whether it's your business or yourself, I don't disagree with that, but we have to win over people to seeing a new perspective. I happen to think that, yes, media, as you know, the lady was saying before, is very important because most working people or those who are working come home, turn on the television, and that's the narrative they know. They don't get to hear PRN or other progressive radio or even whatever radio, much to listen to when they're non-working hours. Many of us are doing the cycle of work, coming home, and that's all we know. We're tuning out. We're in the local bar. We're having conversation. But I'm suggesting that we have to find ways to continue to communicate and dialogue with not just each other, but people with alternative points of view. I was more than, I have this idea of going to talk to David Duke, not because I agree with him, but to see where we have common interests and common desires about the same thing you care about, I care about. Everybody cares about their children. And then, therefore, even the idea of what the woman said earlier about just letting it implode, I'm sure she's got a child, some young person in her family, and that I think she would agree, that you'll be concerned about their future 20 to 30 years from now. I, too, am older than 50. But my concern is not about me. It's about our future, our children.
I want to ask you this question, Jay. Sure. I mean, it seems as if you have a certain clarity about the system that we're all struggling with and we're all enveloped by. Mm-hmm. Do you think this year, because it is really so extraordinary in so many ways, do you think this year will provoke or encourage people to actually undertake a reckoning of the type that I'm describing, which is we really need to assess what it is that we're living with and we're living in? And we should make up our minds one way or the other. We should have a greater sense of clarity about who we are as individuals as political beings. Do you get a sense? I want to ask you.
You're in a silo.
Have you gone through this?
Yeah, I can answer that. You and I and others who think that we are political beings are in our own silo. We're echo chambers. And the fact is that, yes, there are many people who have been aroused, entertained, concerned, and jostled into the narrative of what popular politics and partisan politics is in America. But there are very few, I think, that have exposed and really seen themselves as a conscious person, an actor engaged in this process. This is part of the hollowing out of America. You have this sense of people are disenfranchised and not really being listened to. So the few of us that are passionate or have a concern are the ones who are listening to a PRN. I would even give the people listening, not in a restroom bar, but people listening, they are also looking for a way out to say this thing is not working. And we are, for the first time, the national stage in this election, this 2016, we're seeing that, and it's being paraded on the media, commercial media, as a manner of this is our election, it's legitimate. But I think there's so many closets. It's been, for what Donald Trump isn't, and he is an imbecile and a moron. He just could not intellectually carry the weight of what was necessary to be said about the hypocrisy and the false reality that we're living in, even as he exposed the Republican Party elite. And then he came at Hillary with legit, some of the things very legitimate, but he can't articulate. So he failed in that regard. And not because I wanted him to win, but damn, if you're going to be a maverick, go at it. And that's what I wanted to hear, the argument to raise the consciousness of the people. Charles Ortel's conversation and his comments and narrative are exposed, expose is not being told. And I think that many of us have a burden to carry that forth, to talk about it, even when people get burnt out, because a lot of people I've talked to are burnt out. I don't hear anything about that, because that's what they intend us to do. But then I know I got the burden. I'm going to keep walking. I'm going to keep talking, keep doing what I can do. And I'm going to
rolling your rock uphill.
Yeah. And I'm going to see that this Green Party hopefully emerges to be something in New York, because many years ago I looked for it. I didn't see it. And yes, I have a lot of criticism, but you know what? When we critique and criticize everything that's not going right, we need to look within and ask, what am I not doing? I think you're starting that conversation. And I think the other part is, and most importantly, we have to find, and I'm going to say, and I don't want to sound sort of philosophical, but a love supreme. I say that because it's going to take love to energize us, to know, look beyond our faults and look beyond others' faults and embrace the best in us. And that's not I'm not saying it for some sort of, you know, commercial. This is where we are, because we are at a point where on the precipice of a world war, economic collapse and ecological collapse. There is very little time. And for the sake of our children. Okay.
Thank you, Jay. Quite a lot you put on our table today. You put on our table quite a feast to really ponder, and we will continue to do exactly that. Marie from Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon again, Latrice.
Good afternoon to you, Marie.
I love your show. I didn't plan to call because I just came out of town. But I understand in our country that so many numbers, I don't know whether it's a million or half a million people have had their faces put into computers or something like that, however the government does those things. Now, in Baltimore City newspaper today, a firm urged city police to go public on surveillance. Before the first plane left the ground, the company operated an aerial surveillance program for the Baltimore Police Department, recommended that the department conduct focused groups and other outreach efforts to gauge community acceptance and concerns. But the department did not hold any such meetings. And I'm going to try to make this brief because it's a long article, today's paper. Today is Friday, October the 21st. And as donors line up and the program gain traction, Police Commissioner Kevin Davis was asked to approve it. And many officials criticized the department for its lack of transparency around the program. And said the police were planning on publicly discussing the program, which is still in a pilot phase, before it was revealed, but never got the chance.
So, Marie.
Yeah.
How does this program, and how does the administration of this program, in your view, relate to the very issue we are talking about today, and that is individuals, citizens, arriving at a point of reckoning about how the system ought to operate and what their power and authority actually is, even though they don't necessarily flex their muscles, but they do have some power and authority over the way they live and the way a system operates on the way they live. So could you bring us to the question on the table today? Has this in one way or the other affected your perception of individual rights or the community's rights versus what the system is saying ought to be done, and just disregard people's input, disregard their concerns, and essentially take the position that, look, we are the authority. We know better than anybody else what needs to be done, and we're just going to go ahead and do it. This election year, how do you as a citizen see yourself and your power, and this being an example of exactly the kind of thing we're talking about, the relationship between the individuals and the communities and the system of power?
I highly resent this surveillance. I think I'm a sort of a private person, and I don't like a surveillance for no reason. And as of mid-August, police had about 310 recorded hours from about 420 flight hours and 102 completed investigate briefs based on the data obtained from the surveillance. I highly resent this. I sort of think it comes back from slavery when we were highly watched, and now we're highly watched. That's what the surveillance is, concerning African Americans, not white people. That's another privilege they have of not being watched. I resent it. I have to truthfully tell you, I don't know what to do about this, you know, as a citizen. And I'd be happy to hear anything from you.
Well, we're all, it's not that we have answers. It is actually, in this phase, we're asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're asking questions in order to encourage people to begin to seek answers.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know what's coming. In fact, in your case, it's already here.
Yes.
All right? You're telling us it's here.
Yes. And this is a militarized state or city, Baltimore, in my opinion.
Of course.
An experience.
So here you are as one aware person. How many others in Baltimore feel exactly the way you do?
I don't know.
Exactly. We don't know either. But we are clear that a system that was supposed to respond in the interest of people like you and others who feel exactly the same way hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't indicated that this is a troublesome thing. It is going along with the plan. So this is what I mean by a reckoning. As citizens, we have to become more and more aware that we are entitled to have our hand, on the throttle and brake of government. It's not an extraordinary gift. It is our right. So when these things are put into play without, major consultation, in fact, they just broke that and said, although it was encouraged, and that made sense to alert people that this is what they have to do, come before the people and explain maybe this is a way of increasing safety or whatever it is that they want to explain it as, but they're not even inclined to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a consciousness that they can do anything and
yeah.
get away with it, and nobody would oppose it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's much, at this point, it's really more so the case that we're asking the questions. The answers will come.
Mm-hmm.
But we are encouraging an awareness, and we're encouraging the pursuit of answers and getting people to the idea that they're entitled to ask questions. And they ought to, based on where we see things going, we have to put something of a defense up because we're overwhelmed. In any other community, such a thing like this you would have people reacting vehemently. I mean, they would come out right away, and it will be known that they have trouble with this surveillance plan. But the community is overwhelmed, which is exactly the perfect time to do these kinds of things, because their attention is on other issues. Their attention is on getting from Monday to Tuesday.
Yes.
You know, their attention is trying to find a job by Friday. So they're not thinking, and they're not putting that much energy in these things that they consider secondary to the immediate situation, which is survival.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you for bringing this up. It's a story that's worth pursuing.
All right.
But
thank
it's
you.
Also a place where you can start this question yourself as to if you are opposed to it, you have a responsibility to involve yourself in finding an answer. And by that, it could be attending meetings or causing meetings to happen that other people could attend, being involved, find out how many other people think the way you do, and do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
You, what I'm saying by the word reckoning, it means it's time to take on, put your hand to the plow.
Take action.
And tackle those things that are directly impacting your life. You can't trust a system to take care of this. So thank you so much for bringing that to our attention today, Marie.
Thank you, dear. Take care. Bye.
Thanks a lot. David from Brooklyn, the other David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
It's a pleasure to get back. We've been having some health issues. That's why you haven't heard from me in a while.
Oh,
but I've been thinking about a lot of things that have been said in the recent past. Things like, you know, joining local groups and so forth and accomplishing goals by joining with other people. But I'm going to go to a different way today and emphasize the importance of individuals taking actions into their own hands. Now, you know where I live. And it's a very gentrified area now. It's getting all kinds of changes. And there's certain things that people could do to improve the situation in their community. And if you depend on a group or a block association and whatnot, it slows you down. So what I'm saying is people have to step up to the plate, create the kind of energy in themselves to change things that need to be changed. For example, where I am, when I moved here maybe 30, 40 years ago, somewhere around that, there were no trees on the whole block. Now there are at least 35 trees. Another situation is that in this community, for a long time, we had many broken sidewalks. Now, if you go on my block and you know where I am, you're not going to find one broken sidewalk. And it's not due to any block association or group of people who did this. It's one person. I won't say who. But things can be done. Now, my pilots at Wingate, most of them are doing well, as you know. Some of them making astronomical salaries, $300K and $400K. And I talk to them quite often. But I always tell them to take action into their hands and help someone behind them. Because there are some people who forget about who's behind. So individual action is important. Don't let you depend on joining up a big group that may be paralyzed or comatose and not forget that you can do things yourself. The program at Wingate is over. And that's because the people in the community haven't taken any action. And
this was a
no
program,
that,
I just want to interrupt you. This was a program in which David basically taught young people how to be pilots, taught them to be pilots. And it was
That's
a spectacularly correct. Successful program.
Yes. So what I'm my takeaway message from this whole discussion, I heard Henry from Chicago talking before, but it's not just about groups. It's about individual action. And that's why you're not going to find, when you come up this way one day, you're not going to find any broken sidewalks, and you're going to find trees all over the community that weren't there before, and there's no block association that got them there. It's individual effort to go to the right buttons and press those buttons and get those things done.
Given what's before us and given what we've experienced in the last year as this presidential race mounted speed, what do you think is, do you think we are ready to become, you know, reconciled with some ideas as to what we ought to be thinking about politically and what we ought to be doing politically?
Well, I don't think that most of the people in this community understand the system. They don't understand that there's no hope in supporting either the two capitalist divisions of the same party that run the country. Hillary Clinton and a lot of other people, they keep using this, they use this word democracy quite loosely. There's no democracy here. This is an oligarchy. They're certainly not going to, the people who control the schools and the colleges and whatnot, they're not going to teach people that. But people have to understand this is an oligarchy. These elections, in most cases and many cases, are rigged. Trump may be right about that, see? So the point is things are rigged all along, and a lot of us don't understand it, and there's no future at all under the two capitalist parties, Republicans and Democrats. People have to go and do something else. They ought to be a people's party, a party that is divorced from those who are in the two major capitalist groups. To me, voting in this election for one of those two people is no different than at a slave plantation. The slaves are allowed to vote for who's going to be the overseer, Republican or overseer Democrat, because those at the top, the oligarchs and the plutocrats at the top, those are the ones who make the decision. They control the media, all forms of media. They control who gets to the point where they can even start running in either the Republican or Democrat Party. So, people have to understand that and get out of this notion of being part of your enemy's party. You see, so that makes no sense to me. So I think we have to do a massive job of re-education of people when we can. We have to do the individual thing where we take action where we can, like a person that you may know did. And we have to fight on all fronts. This is a multifaceted attack against people. And, we have to bring ourselves to understand, to analyze, to know what's going on, what's truly going on, so we can do the things that is necessary to have a country that's run in the interests of the people rather than a whole country that is run in the interests of financial capital, of insurance companies, and corporations. It does not function. And all of we have here, and is important to mention, this is all a bad situation for the mass of people. People are poor. pour over the country, and that is no accident. That's because those who rule at the top, the oligarchs and the plutocrats, want it that way.
Thank you, David, for calling in and chiming in this discussion. Thank you. We have a short time left, Leona from Michigan, but it will give you enough time to make your point.
Okay. Greetings, Patrice, and greetings to your audience. And
Thank you so much. And same to you.
Thank you. And this has been a great show, and I agree with a lot of the points that the previous David caller just made. In terms of the individual thing, I have adopted new behavior on an individual level, and I'm studying the work of Neely Fuller Jr. and Dr. Francis Kress Welsing. And I wanted to say that there are four things in his book that he talks about that people, the best way to spend time and energy, and I've been trying to employ this. The first thing is, and I'll be brief, as long as white supremacy exists, use all of your time and energy doing the following, and do not willfully make and maintain contact with other persons except for the following purposes. One, producing, building, repairing, improving, and or cleaning those things that have constructive value and using them for constructive purposes only. Two, studying, writing, asking questions, and or exchanging views with others about all aspects of how to eliminate racism and how to produce justice in all areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, counter war. Three, eating and sleeping correctly and only as necessary. Four, engaging in sexual intercourse no more than 2 times every 7 days and using a minimum amount of time and resources in association with such engagements. That's some individual behavior that I'm striving to be in alignment with. And then, of course, there's the behavior that Dr. Francis Kress Welsing talked about too, those stops, which I try to employ.
All right, but I'm trying to get this out of you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Is there, while you're doing this process, is there, to your mind, a reckoning that is occurring?
Yes, ma'am, and you're helping with that reckoning process. Yes, the need for clarity and focus. And I like what you said on one of your shows, I don't know if it's this week or the week before, about how this system deliberately wants us to feel disempowered and suppresses any urges for critical thinking. It wants us frozen and poisoned, dysfunctional. It wants us that way, and it's a major fight to fight against those forces that want us in that box, and thinking that we don't have power, and definitely awakening. And in terms of this election, makes me sick. But I'm reminded of a quote that Joseph Stalin made. He said, "The people who cast votes don't decide an election; the people who count the votes do." And Franklin D. Roosevelt was quoted as saying, "Presidents are selected, not elected." So,
well,
yes, ma'am.
Based on what you see ahead, how do you assess the community's preparedness to meet it?
Oh, we hit. And when you say community, I can only speak for my understanding of the black community. I don't even know that I can answer that question. I can only speak for myself. And I know I'm in trouble. And I'm trying to get out of trouble. I'm trying to focus on problem solving, those problems that are in front of me. And changing my own behavior. For example, not calling anybody out of his or her name, and not gossiping about anybody, try not to squabble with anyone. Don't snitch on somebody for personal gain. Try not to cuss at nobody. Don't be discourteous to anyone or disrespectful. Don't steal from anybody. Don't rob anybody, fight anybody, kill anybody. Don't trash my home or community or workplace. Don't sell drugs. Don't encourage black children to think they can be adequate mothers and fathers at a young age. Don't encourage people to believe that welfare will save them, or encourage people to believe in prosperity, beginning with myself. Not pretending that racism, white supremacy does not exist. And not allowing any black, brown, red, or yellow person to be divided or conquered by the perpetrators of white supremacy. These guidelines I get from the work of Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. It's like a behavior code for black self and group respect and mental health.
Well, we are out of time. We're right at the top of the hour. So I want to thank you so much for calling in and sharing these very personal thoughts with us today. Thank you, Leona,
yes,
from Michigan.
Yes, ma'am.
And thank you all. The thoughts that you share are such incredible, of such incredible value, because they are your intimate thoughts, and I thank you for giving us the privilege of sharing them. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Let me know what you think about the program at leadstories@gmail.com. It's the weekend. Surround yourself with very positive people, and we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.